This is KGMI Connects with Joe Tian, a live local show about our community and you on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham, and KGMI.com.
Well, hello there. Thanks for being with us here on this Wednesday afternoon. I don't know where that came from, but I am excited to have you with us and hope you'll join our conversation. 360-676-5464 is our phone number. You can also text at that number, but you call, then we can have a discussion, have a conversation. 360-676-5464 is our phone number here at KGMI Connects. And at KGMI, any other time, you got something you want to bring to our attention, give us a ring. And we got a couple of callers ready to go. Real quick, though, I saw this, and whatever you think about the law in that's been revived, I guess, by the Supreme Court in Arizona. I was reading this Associated Press article about it and about where it came from, its origins. And apparently New York Judge William Thomas Howell wrote 500 pages that spanned provisions on dueling accidental homicides by acts and age of consent that would govern the newly formed territory of Arizona. This territory had fewer than 7,000 people in it. Tucked within the Howell Code, it talked about duels, but also, of course, this law and criminalizing any abortion done with the exception of that could save them, or would be necessary to save the mother's life. Some other aspects of this Howell Code: there were exceptions for homicides, such as when a man is at work with an axe and the head flies off and kills a bystander, or where a parent is moderately correcting his child and happens to occasion death. Wow. So, hey, you were just moderately disciplining the child that you just killed. Holy moly. It also set the age of consent at 10 years. All right. Yeah, so the passage is, every person of the age 14 years and upwards who shall have carnal knowledge of any female child under the age of 10 years, either with or without her consent, shall be adjudged guilty of the crime of rape. So 10 and up was all right, but under 10. So just for context here, where this law came from. And as I said, regardless of how you feel about that ban being in place in Arizona, I thought I'd just throw that out there. Well, let's get rolling. As I said, 360-676-5464 is our phone number, and we haven't heard from him for a few days, so let's get started with John in Ferndale. Hi, John.
Hey, Joe. Yeah, this is the thing. This is, what people who are pro-choice like myself, right, warned everyone about, and people used to laugh at me, when I would tell them, look, they're going to take away a woman's right to choose. And there was a lot of complacency on the Democratic side. When you start telling women that they have to have a rape baby, or you tell a 10-year-old who's been raped, or no exceptions for incest, Joe, it's just inhuman. And people are finally waking up, like this overreach by the packed conservative court, which is immoral, and they can't see it. I know. The thing is, absolutely nobody wants, I don't want abortions to happen. And most women do birth control, promiscuous women, they don't want stretch marks. They're not going to wait till the 9th month. Like I've said a million times, the only women that are having abortions that late are the ones where they've had a miscarriage and they have to have a DNC to, and I know this because I have a sister and she had an ectopic pregnancy and she sat me down and I'm like, women who are fertile need a tax break. It is so easy being a dude, except you got to get your prostate checked later on,
right now.
When you're older. But, if you've never gone through it. So Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers. What do you got on him?
He's so stupid, Joe. He doesn't think that President Biden is actually President Biden. Now, I don't know if he thinks it's a clone or a robot, or some people like my aunt think it's the actor James Woods.
Oh, really?
Even though James Woods is a staunch conservative. Or she thinks it's the actor Jim Carrey because he played him on Saturday Night Live. She gets clips out of context because she's fallen for this Russian disinformation. This is what Aaron Rodgers is falling for, right? So he says that, well, he wants to make a bad guy out of Dr. Fauci, even though Dr. Fauci was a hero. And he's going off about, oh, the AIDS crisis and Dr. Fauci with his AZT. And trying to push that on people. And it's like, one of my foster brothers had HIV and was on AZT, but Aaron Rodgers didn't know anything. I mean, back in like 96, they came up with this wonder drug, protease inhibitors for people who have HIV. Mm-hmm. And it stops the virus from reproducing and makes them so that they are undetectable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my foster brother is alive today because of the research done by Dr. Fauci. And, you know, it's just this demonization because some people just, they think they know more than they actually know.
Yeah.
Or that their information is somehow secret and special and overrides, like this whole thing with Trump, right? This, you know, him trying to cover up the Stormy Daniels, not to mention the other woman he was cheating on his wife with while she was, you know, had just given birth, Karen McDougal, the Playboy playmate, right? So he's got two side chicks that we know of at the time. But this is Trump. He's what they would call a lecherous man.
Okay.
He cheated on every wife he ever had. He just can't. He just can't. He can't stay faithful.
Okay.
You know,
right.
And
well,
trying to cover it up, that's the crime, because everyone knows after the bus incident, grab him by the you-know-what.
Okay.
If that stuff had come out,
and
Fred Pecker, or the Pecker guy from the
National Enquirer,
okay, he's going to testify about the capture, and that's where all the fake news. So it's like, finally, people are waking up, Joe.
All right,
great
John.
Talk.
Thanks for calling. I knew we'd get to Trump sooner or later. I think we all knew that. And I think as far as Aaron Rodgers, I think he isn't satisfied with being a great quarterback. Obviously, he wants to be seen as being this incredible font of wisdom and knowledge in all these other areas as well. Take that for what you will. If you want to take it in for, you know, take any kind of advice from Aaron Rodgers other than how to throw a football, I think you're kind of barking up the wrong tree or whatever. Let's go to Tim in Everson. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Joe. Let me get your speaker here. I was just thinking about how much times have changed. I hope you got my photographs on your text.
Let's see here. Today, did you send some photographs?
Just about a half hour ago.
All right. Let's see. I did. Yeah. All right. You got a greenhouse going.
Yeah, and some onions.
Uh-huh.
I didn't show you the other stuff, but I will when it starts catching.
You got some nice starts going there. So are those tomato plants?
Those are tomatoes, and I think some of the onions. Yeah, and the fence is over the onions because we have a couple of miscreants over here that want to get into stuff and dig.
You'd believe that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
I got a lab too. I have one lab out of the three dogs. Man, I can't believe how high he can jump and the trouble he can get into. But anyway, if you think about, and it's a long time ago, I mean, probably 10, 15 years before I was born, 70, 80 years ago, if you think about a woman was basically, I don't know what you would call them. If they weren't married by 20,
mm-hmm.
they were an old maid,
okay.
basically.
Uh-huh. Probably, I guess,
And a lot of people made those marriages work. They made them work quite successfully.
Well,
so I was just thinking.
Okay, go ahead.
You can go ahead. I'm just wondering. I mean, and that was my message to your call screener was how times have changed.
Sure. In relation to women and marriage and all that, are you talking about specifically? Or yeah, but a lot of things have changed.
I don't know. It just seems a little bit weird to me. And now there's people 25, 30, 35 years old that wish they would have gotten married.
Yeah. And well, there are always those folks, but there are a lot of, women in, recent decades have found that they want to assert themselves. I'm not all women. I think there are still women who get married at a young age and are happy with that choice, and all the more power to them.
Would you say that your mom was a strong woman in the household?
Well, absolutely. My mother was a very strong woman, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And I just don't get it, Joe. I mean.
What?
I just wonder.
Why can't they just, what?
No. I mean, strong women are strong women.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
End of story. They can control the household, period.
Sure. Okay, but I guess beyond that, I'm trying to. I don't want to put words in your mouth. And what's your point to that women should?
Why have things changed so much? That was the story of my, or the.
Well,
the reason I called.
As women have become more and more part of the workforce and have gained more and more leadership positions, whether it in business or what have you, in places, organizations outside of the home, it's become more and more difficult for them to be homemakers, if that, if you know what I mean. And
that's a very valid argument.
It doesn't mean that because a woman wants to be successful in her career, whatever that might be, that she doesn't want to have a family and a home and have children eventually or at any time or be married. But it's become, instead of doing it because you're just expected to do that, that's what you're expected to do, it's become a choice, which I think is probably the best outcome for all that. It seems to be logical to me that individuals should have the right to choose their own destiny, whatever that might be, and make their own decisions, whether those decisions are ones that they're happy with or ones that they may rue at one point in life. But all right,
can I make one more comment real quick?
Sure.
The reason I sent you those pictures is because I'm sure I'm going to get a naysayer in here pretty quick. And what I showed you wasn't the half of it. And what I showed you isn't even half my property.
Okay.
So there's ways to get by. There's ways to make a living. Okay. There's ways to help out others. Because I give half of this stuff away. I was going to say a bad word there, Joe. You would have cut me off.
I would have, yeah. I give at least
half or 70% of this stuff away.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So I don't want to hear any socialist jibber-jab.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay, Tim, thanks. Quick break and back with more, 360-676-5464.
It's a big step going from nothing to I'm going to pick a company and maybe based on some reviews and have them come out and trust them in my home to take care of me.
Matt is a senior technician at Mars Heating and Air Conditioning. He knows this new relationship begins with him.
Having maintenance done, you got to get to know some technicians, you get to know a company and have some trust, and you're not so left in the dark. I got one customer in particular who it's his big thing, is like, just take care of me. It's like, you know what? I'm going to take care of you. It's once a year. So I've seen him 4 or 5 times. I do maintenance. He doesn't have problems. That's what we're after. But he's been through a lot over the last number of years, and we've been a part of some of that. He's really excited when I get to come out there. You know, he says, you know, like, I trust you. Take care of me. Leads me out of that furnace and we can talk about everything that's going on. I love it.
Mars Heating and Air Conditioning. Dedicated to our craft since 1965.
B&W Perks has given you a chance to create amazing memories that will last a lifetime for half the price this week with Outer Island Excursions. Dive into the heart of nature with Killer Whale Tours, home of the guaranteed killer whale sightings. With Outer Island Excursions, you'll experience the thrill of seeing majestic creatures in their natural habitat. Their high-speed boats, manned by trained naturalists, will whisk you away on an unforgettable adventure. Perfect for all ages, tours offer an inspiring way to spend time with your loved ones. Picture yourself surrounded by stunning views, creating unique memories with your family and friends. Don't miss out on the feast for the senses that await you this summer. Visit orcawatching.com and reserve your tours before dates fill up. Outer Island Excursions is not just a tour, it's a journey into the awe-inspiring beauty and untamed wilderness. Create exhilarating memories with Outer Island Excursions and P&W Perks. Visit pnwperks.com to get half off at Outer Island Excursions this Thursday at 8 a.m. That's at pnwperks.com.
Taking your calls live on KGMI Connects.
360-676-5464.
We certainly are. Let's go to John in Custer. Hi, John.
Hey, good afternoon, Joe. Hey, I just wanted to register my disappointment, not really surprised that the Senate's declining to hold a trial for Mayorkas on impeachment. And it's for personal reasons that I'm not even sure exactly what all the charges he might have faced, but it kind of goes way beyond that. And I'll give you a little background. I was a Border Patrol agent, retired up here. And I'll tell you, universally, Mayorkas has been despised by every agent since the late 90s. And that came from he was the U.S. attorney, I believe, in San Francisco, and we had a very notorious case in the Border Patrol. Two agents were murdered by smugglers, Ted Newton and George Azrak. And their killers were sentenced to life, and one of them was paroled with kind of under the radar in the late 90s. And U.S. attorney was pressured, and that was Mayorkas, to appeal that Ninth Circuit decision and, you know, make sure that that person faced justice. He refused to do that. No amount of letters from the family or from the agency swayed him. So that's kind of his reputation. And then he kind of came back again during the Obama administration. You remember all the stuff about the jails not honoring immigration holds? That was all going on, I think, about 2014 or so.
I don't know specifically, but go ahead.
Yeah. What happened there was, you know, immigration officers, Border Patrol agents included, would do routine sweeps of the jails, and anybody who was here illegally or here on a green card and committed crimes, they were put into deportation proceedings if that's what the law called for. And Mayorkas, under that administration, he was the deputy, second in charge. He didn't like that, and he was a strong proponent for immigration not getting involved in local government, local law enforcement dealings with aliens. I remember sitting at a meeting where they came up to Whatcom County and were trying to convince all the local police agencies not to cooperate with Border Patrol. And I have to say, none of our local folks showed up at that meeting except for Sheriff Elfo, who basically told them, look, it's another law enforcement agency. They translate for us. You know, you want us to use a language line, and then who's going to pay for a witness when I got to bring somebody in from Iowa who answered the phone when I got an agent right here who can, you know, provide that. So, okay. For whatever reason, he's been adamant on.
Was there any kind of because the Mayorkas had to go through confirmation process when he was first nominated? Was there any kind of opposition that is? I didn't follow that. But was there an opposition that was mounted against his nomination? And were these concerns voiced to the Senate?
Yeah, I don't recall. And, you know, there's a whirlwind of things going on when a new administration takes hold. I don't recall that he, you know, ever here and he faced much opposition. But, in my opinion, and I'm sure it's shared by anybody in law enforcement, is, this kind of defeats the purpose. I mean, whatever you believe about how immigration should run, I think you would find almost everybody would agree that if you have somebody here that's conditionally here on a green card and they commit crimes, they should be deported. And then definitely somebody who's not supposed to be here, who's committing crimes, should be deported.
Well, I remember that was the policy of the Obama administration. They said so time and again that anyone who committed crimes would be deported. That was their focus. Those were the people that were targeted for deportation, were those who had committed crimes while here. Undocumented.
Obama came out strong. I was surprised. That was one of his platforms. But during his administration, late in his administration, he got rid of, they called it the Secure Communities Act, that actually increased the amount of cooperation between, you know, deportable aliens in jail and Immigration Service. And they got rid of that. In fact, that's why Mayorkas sent his people up here to try to sever ties with the locals, between the locals and the federals. So I don't know what happened. I know Jay Johnson was in charge, and he, after he left, he said that was a big mistake. Okay. But I think Mayorkas, you know, that's kind of been the policy now. Anyway.
All right.
I don't want to take up too much more time, but
I appreciate
this wasn't a good thing.
appreciate your perspective on it, John. Thanks for your call.
All
right. Let's see, real quick, before we take a break, let's go to Jim in Bellingham. Hi, Jim. What's on your mind today?
Oh, all sorts of stuff, as usual.
I bet, yeah, okay.
I just know Tim from Everson. He said that I didn't care about the environment because he drove a truck. Well, what I want to mention is that our society is too atomized to depend on the individual, such as Tim and Everson, to single-handedly save the environment. It needs a collective response because there's people that work 30 and 40 miles from where they work, and I'm not going to say you got to, you know, give up your vehicle and all that. It has to be done through the public good. And what I did say to Tim was that you oppose the welfare state. I think he does in general. He's worried about people like me on disability. And Noam Chomsky said that, well-known Noam Chomsky, except he never makes mainstream appearances too much, even though he's old. But he said that any well-run society would be an extreme form of a welfare state. And we all know, of course, I'll admit that it takes work to create wealth, but our capitalist system isn't actually based on work, is it? It's about dividends, interest income, inheritance, and all sorts of things. So should the scrutiny go down on disabled people like me, who worked very hard at times and most of the time for my benefits, and the poor in general? Or should the scrutiny ever go upward, as in Gore Vidal would say, as a patrician ranting at costs? He talked about how they want to portray the image that they work real hard when they didn't. So maybe they'll be spurred on by this to make it look good. And Michael Parenti talks about the tiny group of people at the top who usually do not work at all. If they do work, it's because they choose to. And the Democrats are much paid for by moneyed interests now, too. That's why we're finding these divisions. That Richard Wolff, who is a socialist, talks about on his Counterpunch article of a couple of days ago. And then you've got Dennis Prager, USA Bank or whatever he's talking about, the banks taken over by the left. Hmm. Now, only an absurdly educated populace could take that seriously.
Yeah.
So is Brian Becker, the socialist program, is he taking over the banks? Not likely. So I think we should call that out.
Okay.
As far as Social Security disability, Medicaid, these programs, just count me in as a full on supporter of those programs. I think they're very necessary, and they are a lifeline to many, many Americans who deserve it. And
I'd like to think I deserve those otherwise I'd be a self-hating white guy. They call me like Norman Finkelstein, a self-hating Jew because he opposes Israel, which is slaughtering people because of class interests more than as much as anything else.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, thanks for letting me on, Joe. I appreciate it.
Jim. All right. Thanks for your call. We'll take a quick break. Be back with more. We got Rich, Lou, Michelle, and we'll have room to squeeze you in, too, here on KG My Connects, 360-676-5464. Back in 2 minutes.
Welcome aboard.
Oh, thank you. Did I just step into a Dreamliner?
Airport or Shuttle's new luxury motor coaches surprise even seasoned travelers.
Have to admit, I'm kind of blown away here.
Loads of legroom, LED ceiling lighting, tiered theater seating, and three-point seat belts. Save on fuel and parking. Enjoy a quieter, more productive, and swanky cool ride to SeaTac Airport. Visit airporter.com. Airporter.com and ride today.
You love what you find at Wilson.
Great summer start at Wilson's Furniture. Wilson's is where you'll find the biggest and best selection of patio and outdoor furniture north of Seattle. If you haven't shopped for patio furniture lately, you are going to be amazed at the variety you're going to find. Wilson's has patio furniture made in aluminum, wrought iron, antique. You'll find motion furniture, pub style, fire pit groupings, sectionals, love seats, and more. Way too many combinations to even describe. You truly have to see for yourself the selection at Wilson's. And the staff at Wilson's are experts in helping guide you through your shopping experience, helping match you, your budget, and lifestyle with the perfect combination of furniture that you'll enjoy not just this summer, but for years to come. Looking for a new way to enjoy the summer night, even when it's a bit cool? You'll love what you'll find at Wilson's Furniture. Open 7 days a week on Pacific Highway in Ferndale.
You'll love what you find.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Harness the power of the sun, reduce your carbon footprint, and save on your energy bills. Explore the advantages of going solar with West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham.
Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
We're taking your calls live on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
Here we go to Rich in Ferndale. Hi, Rich.
How's it going, Joe?
Doing all right. Beautiful day out there.
I think Tim's point or question was, now that there's more women in the workforce and less sole homemaker wives, like the old, is society happier and better? That's a question. I think that's a good question to look at. I think there's a lot of women that are very happy with careers and financial success and independence, but I think there's some of them too. They get into their late 30s and 40s and, I did this career, that's great, but now a family is harder to have as you age. So there's goods and bads with everything, and mm-hmm. society and media always show one side of it, but not the other. And there's pluses and minuses to both. And, money's great, careers are great, but family is more important than that. And that's, I think, what many people realize as you get older, that have a family and be, that's more important than money a lot of times.
Right. And but then, there are many, many individuals, women and men, even couples who decide, children aren't right for us. We're not going to do that. I'm not going to have children. Maybe at one point in their lives, they'll think, I wish I had made a little bit different decision or made a different decision on that. But I mean, it's a decision then that they've made, and then they live with it. And for good or bad.
And the question is, why is this trend changing? Why are there less children being had in Western nations? And I think it's because we're taught that people are bad for the earth, and it's a guilt trip. Your carbon footprint, people are evil. Well, but see, Joe,
not
that's
evil,
so wrong.
But I mean,
well, there's the environment. It's a negative connotation to having a family.
Well,
and that is a sad thing for society to put on people.
Well, yeah, but there are those that say, I don't care. I'm going to have 7-8 kids. It's not that people are evil, but it's that our sheer numbers, because, you know, we just grow as a world population just exponentially, obviously.
You know what happens if we stop growing?
You have 3 kids. They have 3 kids. They have 3 kids. It just grows and grows and grows. So,
but it's not. China is shrinking. Western nations are a shrinking population. Mm-hmm. The only people groups that are actually increasing in number are African nations and South American poorer people.
Nations, yeah, that yes, they can't support the increase in population. You're right.
But if we have a shrinking population, we have a labor force problem and an economic problem, because you need a certain amount of young people to work and be productive in order for the older people to retire and be taken care of.
Immigrants.
Whether that be directly from... Yes, well, that is...
All right.
I think that is how they're filling the void.
Well, it is to a degree, sure.
But it's sad because they don't know English. They're hard to integrate in society. A lot of them aren't educated. The illegals I'm speaking of. Now, legal immigrants is completely different. A lot of them are educated, and they get hired specifically for certain jobs from other nations because they have certain skills that a company is looking for. And they'll even do the paperwork to bring them in, some of these high-tech outfits. They'll, hey, well, if you've got this and this education, we'll get you here.
But, I mean, just assuming that someone who comes here without an education and without basic
illegal
skills— that regardless, but to just assume that they will be nothing but a drag on society, I think is the wrong assumption. I mean,
but they're going to be more needy of things because they're going to have a lower wage job. That's just a fact. When you're not educated, you're going to be doing the farm work and the labor ready jobs that don't pay as well. That's just, and how far can you, like, say, Whatcom County, if you don't speak English, what jobs are available to you? I mean, seriously, that's a legitimate question. I mean, you're stuck with farm labor jobs and construction sites that have Spanish-speaking people, which there's more of that, but not a lot. They're not going to get paid great. I mean, it's just how it is.
Yeah, but but many of those people, too, are motivated to learn English or to be able to communicate. And to
work. That is the good part, too. Those people are willing to work. The native-born American, I'm not saying that natives like you think, but like me or you who's born here,
right,
we're generally more lazy. The second and third generation Americans, they don't want to do physical work. It's beneath them. You see this attitude all the time.
Depends,
even with kids in school, I can't do that. Oh, that's beneath me. And, well, if we didn't have all those social programs, they would be doing those jobs. Nothing would be beneath anybody because they would need money to eat. But now that we have so many easy street programs, what's the point? You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. You just go on some sort of assistance program, because if you're an electrician, you don't have to do any other kind of work in your life ever. You don't have to learn nothing. You just, I laid off from being an electrician. I can't go be a welder because that's a different trade.
There aren't, you can't just, like, I couldn't just quit and, you know, just say, okay, I'm done. I'm just going to go on public assistance. I don't think I could do that. I've had
family that's done that. They've made a career out of cheating the system, and they make up fake disabilities, even research what disabilities you could have that were hard to prove.
But now, I have experienced getting a close relative onto Social Security disability. It is not that.
Yeah.
It's not a simple process.
Yeah. Two thirds
of those who apply are denied. Many people who deserve it have to apply multiple times just to get it.
Definitely deserve, like your family member you're talking about, totally deserves it. That's legitimate, and it goes through, but yes, it takes time. But the cheaters are willing to spend the time to go through the system as well.
Well,
I got a
it's
family member
take,
that did
it's three
or four
them,
years.
Well, right. That's going to take them a
they
long time.
That's what they did.
All right.
And they did it and got in it. They've never worked a day in their life the last 20 years, and they laugh about it.
Well, there are going to be people who can cheat any system, but by and large, that doesn't mean the system is not necessary and should be disbanded.
Well, it means it should be policed a little better, and we shouldn't allow cheaters.
Well, then we
got
to fund it better.
Schools, you don't. Right. You don't let kids cut in line and stuff.
And we got to quit cutting taxes. We have to pay for all this stuff, Rich. Yes, we do. I mean, we can't just deny that we can't do all these things and not pay people to do it. All this policing and follow up and
You know, I mean, all the things we've talked about, you know, policing the border, jailing people, and here, you know, policing the disability and all this stuff. I mean, it takes resources, but just, and I'm not saying that these things shouldn't be done, but we have to, as a society, admit, okay, we want all these things done. We're going to have to pay for it. Nothing comes free, ultimately. But real quick, let's go to Michelle in Bellingham. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Joe. You know, my friend Tim was musing about why times have changed so much in the past 70 or 80 years. So I thought I'd talk about that a little bit. You know, I went to school in the 50s and 60s, and, you know, from K through master's in college. And all of that time, it was so much easier for people to get married, for people to buy a house, for people to make a, you know, for a woman to stay home if she wanted to. I was the only child in my elementary school classes whose mother worked full time. And my mother was a CEO of the Red Cross Blood Bank in California, one of the blood banks in California. And everybody was just astonished that I had a working mother and a very famous father and mother, too, in mm-hmm. the city. And the thing is that, you know, but I can remember, you know, Dad telling me he paid $12,000 for a house in 1950 that is now worth about $1.5 million, according to Zillow. And it wasn't a new house. It wasn't particularly, you know, fancy, but it was a nice place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is, though, that it was so much like when I started working full time through college, I had a photographic memory, so I didn't have to study much. That helped a lot.
Okay.
But I worked at least 30 to 40 hours all the way through college. And, you know, I was able to rent an apartment in 1969 for $100 a month, and I was making $120 for 30 hours work a week. So for, you know, less than 25% of my income, I was able to rent an apartment.
Okay.
And a lot of my friends did the same thing. And as far as, you know, in the 50, you know, 70, 80 years ago, the vast majority of women were told they could only be nurses or teachers or secretaries or
right.
something of that nature. I remember in elementary school, K through 6 in my case, a very large one, there was only one man that ever worked in those 7 years at the elementary school as a teacher. Mm. Now, the principal was a man, but as far as the teachers go, only one man worked there.
As I think about it, yeah, when I was in grade school.
How about you? Same thing probably, right?
I think so. I mean, I remember, you know, a PE teacher was a man, and
we didn't have one. We just had recess.
And then I remember having a man for an art teacher, but yeah. And then not till I got into middle school did I have you know some male teachers in the mix there.
Same with me, and
yeah.
But we were just. It was very hard for me in my career early on. I had a heck of a time in a career that was non-traditional for women. And it was hard, but mm-hmm. I just fought my way through. I never stopped fighting,
yeah.
And it was okay.
Well,
I did great.
You make
know?
A good point but, that it is. I think it is harder, and that's how my wife and I were able to afford to buy our first house and all that.
There
was
you go.
Because we both worked and both made a modest salary. We never made a ton of money, but and I was just looking here, I just did a real quick search while you're talking about, so $25,000. You know, I had some friends who said our parents bought this beautiful house and for $25,000 back in the 1960s. I don't know exactly what year, but I looked up 1965. $25,000 in 1965 would be have the purchasing power equivalent to $247,882 today. So
that's true. I mean, but how many homes are available for $247,000?
Right. Yeah. Well, not many. I don't know of any here. but well, there, in there, other cities the there are, but I mean, yeah. I mean,
the only places in all of America where homes are available like that is in, you know, rural areas, areas where people of color live, and other areas that are basically, you know, low-income areas. And I mean, throughout most of America, it's very difficult now to buy a home for a great many people.
Sure.
And the other thing is that, and I'm not even talking about a fancy home. In Bellingham, the average price is over $600,000 now. I mean, holy mackerel, you know. When I moved here 25 years ago, I paid $150, and now
maybe,
it's worth $700 or something, you know.
Right, yeah, I know, I hear you.
Crazy, you know, but... Joe, what I'm telling you is that times have changed dramatically on an economic basis, on a social basis. Women were not allowed to even hold credit card accounts unless they were incredibly tough women like my mother that didn't put up with any nonsense whatsoever. I mean, she was the toughest woman you ever met.
All right.
And, you know, I'm just saying that most women did not have control of their destiny.
Right, right.
To a great degree, and it was a big problem in the 50s and 60s, early 60s. I think everything dramatically changed with first Kennedy's assassination, then MLK and RFK and 68, and then the Vietnam War, and on and on.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that
I think we get it,
changed.
Michelle. They certainly have, that's for sure. Thanks for your thoughts. Let's go to Lou in Linden. Hi, Lou.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, I was curious about your name. So I looked it up, did some research, and I found that Joe Tian is actually the Irish Gaelic version of Joe Biden. So all of a sudden, I became aware of the fact that that's why you agree with Joe Biden. You are Joe Biden. You are the president of the United States. It's an honor to talk with you, sir.
That what?
And I just thought I'd lighten up the dialogue.
There you go.
Today.
So now Tian is the Gaelic for Biden? I don't know.
Yeah, Irish Gaelic.
I see.
And, and that's probably why, you know, the guy in Washington, D.C. is an AI imposter, is an artificial intelligence bot. And you're the real president. You're out there laying low while the guy back is working out with the World Economic Forum and all the big conspiracy characters like Klaus Schwab, you know.
That's
the
right.
Usual suspects.
Don't worry, Lou. I'm a benevolent leader.
Well, great. That's what we need, a benevolent dictator.
That's right, exactly.
That's why I'm looking forward to Jesus. He'll be the king of the world, a benevolent dictator, and we certainly need that.
All right, Lou. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Quick break and back with more. We got Laura on the line. We'll hear from her, and you too. We'll have time to squeeze in your call in just a moment.
Hey there, neighbor. What'll it be?
It'll be fast, with flavors on point.
Hey, good to see you again. What'll it be today?
It'll be friendly, because around here, you're part of the family.
Back again, huh? What'll it be?
It'll be delicious. After all, that's really why you keep coming back.
What'll it be? It'll be Cedar's Restaurant. Why? It's the warm, inviting aroma of home-cooked, scratch kitchen delicacies filling the air morning, noon, and night. It's the temptation for a hearty meal with huge portions, or the option to indulge in a refreshing cocktail during the next big game. It's the authentic taste of classic American diner cuisine, served in the heart of Ferndale. It's the irresistible charm of homemade pies and dessert delights. It's Cedar's Restaurant on Main Street. So, pull up a chair. We have a feeling you're going to love being part of our Cedars family. Check out the menu at cedarsferndale.com. And don't forget to call your mother. She worries.
KGMI wants to put a grand in your hand. You could be one word away from a chance to win $1,000.
That's right. Just listen each weekday to KGMI for the keyword during the 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m. hours.
Then go to the Grand in Your Hand contest page at mybellinghamnow.com before midnight and enter each keyword for your chance to win $1,000.
We'll have four keywords each weekday so you can increase your chances of winning by entering all four every day we play the contest.
You already listen to KGMI for the latest local news and discussion of the latest issues. Now you can win $1,000 while you do it.
A Grand in Your Hand is brought to you on KGMI by Niederhaus of Luxury, Whatcom County's newest fine jewelry store, next to Lombardi's on Bellwether Way.
A Grand in Your Hand is back on KGMI.
Get details at mybellinghamnow.com.
We're taking your calls live on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
There we are, and let's go right back to the phones. Laura in Bellingham is on the line. Hi, Laura.
Hey, Joe. I was just listening to a couple things that made me feel another side should be heard.
Sure.
The fellow that was talking about costs and expenses, yes, everything is more expensive. Yes, money is worth less. But generalizing is not really helpful. Bellingham, Washington is one of the highest increasing areas in real estate prices. And it's not just that you're not in the boonies. It is just something to do with this particular area being right next to Vancouver, Canada. And yeah, Seattle's out of my range too, but you can go to LeConnor, you can go to Blaine, you can go to Linden and find a house that is more than it ever should be, but certainly is within people's range. And I'm sorry, but if you take your $150,000 to the Midwest, you can get you a house there too.
Yeah, that's true. Everything isn't as expensive as here in Bellingham. And there are, like you say, Bellingham is a beautiful place that people want to live in. And like you say, we're between these two big cities where people can have come to realize, well, especially if I don't have to go into the office every day, I can buy a house in Bellingham for much less than it would cost for me to buy one in Seattle or Vancouver, for that matter. And
it's a huge draw for retired people.
Yeah,
and they
is.
Have disposable income. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so there are reasons, and it's not an excuse, but that's, you know, it's just a reality of where we live. And those of us who have been here for a long time are lucky. But even when we moved here over 20 years ago, I was surprised by how expensive houses were then. I mean, relatively speaking, the prices weren't anything like now. But
well,
they
it
were
depends where you've come from, too.
Yeah, and they were still comparable to big cities that were drawing a lot of people, and So,
my husband always says, if you really wanted to do this right, you would have come here when people were homesteading.
Yeah, that's true.
Grabbed you a chunk of land
and passed it down through the generations for sure.
The other thing I wanted to express an opinion about is the idea that people like being on welfare. There are no people in any one category that are all the same people. And lots of people make their money doing things illegally. Lots of people are disabled and need to have some support. And it is difficult to get that designation. And if you're looking for work all the time, that's a full-time job in itself. I've done it many times. I've worked for nonprofits all my life, so I don't have a great deal of money. But every time I needed to look for a new job, I did not apply for unemployment because I felt I could make it. And the people who really needed that really needed it. I would not begrudge someone who has a real need to have every effort towards having that need met.
Yeah. And I'm with you on that. I think it just it's a really necessary. It's a safety net, and there are always going to be people that just are not inspired to work or want to find ways to not work. But I don't think that's the majority of people by any means. It's not.
There aren't any more of those people on welfare than there are who are bankers or stockbrokers or traders in illegal whatever.
Right.
There are lots of people who cheat and steal, and it is not disproportionate to people who are low income, who are disabled, who are out of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't think they're any less inclined to do the right thing than I am or than people in higher income brackets are, and each bracket has its own cheaters.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a few of them, but they hold an outsized influence on opinion, I think, in many cases. But Laura, great to hear from you.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
So much. Thanks for your call. And yeah, I mean, I think we have to keep that in mind, that people are always going to cheat the system, regardless of what it is. I mean, we hear about doctors who will cheat the Medicare system or Medicaid, what have you. Find ways to do that. And that doesn't mean all doctors are crooked
or just looking for a way to cheat or pad their bank accounts. And that's just one example. I'm not trying to single out doctors by any means, but there are always going to be people that want to try and cheat the system. And that doesn't mean that the system is not something that's worthwhile. And with all the reforms, stretching back to Bill Clinton's administration of welfare, I mean, basically welfare are, people on welfare are mothers who need it to be able to, and then they have to, they need it to help themselves participate in the workforce because that's part of the mandate that they, that they work at least part time to receive those benefits. And then how do they keep children in daycare and that sort of thing? It's a balancing act that people struggle with each and every day. But great to have you all with us. It's been an interesting conversation, as it always is here on KGMI Connects. Oh, real quick, I found this. Just talking about the prices of things, if I can find it. Article, this was on Cairo's website, but this is the average lifespan of your home appliance and how much it'll cost to fix it. And this is near and dear to my heart, but electric stoves, 13 to 15 years. Gas stoves, 10 to 18 years. Let's see, dryers, electric and gas, they last an average of 13 years. Refrigerators, 14 years. I remember when I bought a new refrigerator a while back and I said to the person at the store, yeah, this old one lasts about 15 years, but it's a goner. And she said, well, I don't think this new one will last that long, actually. I guess the new ones are in the name of higher efficiency, they're underpowering. At least this is what I've heard, underpowering the motors and that sort of thing. Let's see. Washing machines last about 11 years. Wow, my last one lasted almost 20. Dishwashers, 9 years. I just bought one a couple of years ago. I already had to replace a major component of it. But just a little look at that. And we'll be back tomorrow, 4 o'clock, KGMI Connects. Hope you have a great rest of your Wednesday. Enjoy the sunshine.